And welcome to the program on this finally Friday. It is 106:45 on this afternoon, and we'll have a rundown on that holiday weekend forecast coming up in just a bit. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm alongside Ag Director Bridget Riedel and some other guy who's usually here isn't here today. That's all right. We gave him the afternoon off. Bridget, what's going on? How are you doing today?
Hey, it's a good day. I think the weather's pretty good outside. I'm planning on taking a little look around my garden. I haven't been out there this week, but things have changed a little bit. Could I interest you in some cucumbers the size of zucchinis and zucchinis that would double as a small automobile? I can drop them off.
Holy moly. Them a little big for me there, Bridget. If you got any normal sized cucumbers or some little ones, I'll take those. But the really gigantic ones, Yeah, I let mine go too. I have plenty of those.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. For some reason, my cucumbers really produced pretty well, and then they just stopped. Even though I picked them, they just stopped for some reason. Like, there's no more flowers. Oh. They just kind of had, like, 1.5 yield come off of it, and then they're like, we're kind of tired. I think we're done making cucumbers for the year. I'm like, what the heck do you mean you're done?
Well, it's that time of the year where it probably is saying, I'm good. I mean, as I look outside, and
I got to put down more seeds.
I got a couple of trees that are willing to say I'm over it. I'm ready for fall.
Oh, those types of things. Really?
There's a couple that don't mind giving up the ghost a little bit early. They tend to start turning a little bit yellow sooner. And we've already seen dry beans turning. We've got wheat that's trying to be harvested. At this point, I think in some cases it's really just a frustration to try to get the wheat off because it's been raining and really sort of a pain to get that accomplished. So hopefully that gets better for everybody.
Hey, how is your garden doing, by the way, speaking of that?
So far, so good. I've taken a lot of crop out of it, you might say. And in fact, when I go out today, I better check. I think my grapes might be close to being ready.
Whoa, you have grapes?
Mm-hmm.
No
how would
way,
you like
really?
Some for making jelly?
Wow.
Yeah, they are actually the Edelweiss variety.
Edelweiss?
They were developed in this region.
Mm-hmm. I think you mean Endotense.
No, mine are Edelweiss. They're old.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. I was out there. I was staking up some of my tomatoes. I went and stood next to one of them, and it towers over me. I'm almost 6 feet. This thing is stupid how big this tomato plant has gotten. But I was digging in there. I mean, the thing's thick. I mean, like, it's thicker than Montana. That's how big this tomato is. And I'm digging through there, and I'm trying to scourge through all the brush. And I push aside, and I see this big orange-red orb staring me right in the face. It might be the biggest tomato I have ever grown, and I am afraid to touch it.
But that's cool.
I think it is bigger. So if I take both of my fists and I put them together like this, the tomato has to be this big. I mean, it is massive. It probably weighs 3 pounds, I bet, maybe more.
Yep.
And I'm just really excited to pick it when it turns red because there's actually a few of them on there, but that's the biggest one.
Okay, that one's going to be pretty awesome. I just got a message from one of our listeners, and they might not be aware of some of the antics going on in the studio today because the question on the live stream is, Justin, why do you look like you're Amish today? Yeah, anything you want to explain?
We're building a barn later. Give me a break.
I don't think that's where we're going.
Oh, man. I got my boater on. It's like one of my favorite hats that I own. It's actually, I like the hat so much that I actually went out and bought one. My wife bought it for me a couple of years ago. But yeah, I'm rocking the old 1920 boater.
Looks good.
I'm loving it. Don't be jealous.
It is sort of a casual Friday here.
It is a casual Friday.
Everybody dressed up a little bit to get ready for the long weekend ahead of us.
You should have seen what Dean was wearing.
Oh, I saw a picture on Facebook. That's enough.
Yeah, it was pretty loud.
I'll see if I can grab that and send it to Addison to put in our live stream for those who haven't been blessed with that visual aid yet. But meanwhile, if we're going out to the long weekend ahead of us, what's the weather going to be?
It's going to be nice, Bridget. Just a little breezy today and tomorrow. We're seeing wind gusting to 30 right now out of the west, and we'll continue to see breezy conditions lasting throughout today. As we head through the afternoon, we'll top out in the lower 80s. It's currently 78 right now, so we'll bump up a few more degrees. And then we'll see the wind starting to lighten up as we head towards sunset, which is now in the 8 o'clock hour instead of the 9 o'clock hour, which is kind of sad.
I don't like that
it's getting so dark so early. But after dark, the wind will lighten up about 5 to 15, and we'll drop down to a mild low in the upper 50s to near 60 degrees. Now, for the weekend, we'll continue our little warming trend, at least briefly on Saturday. We'll hit an early day high in the low 80s. And then drop into the 70s after a cold front swings through the afternoon. That's going to turn our southwesterly winds more northwesterly into the afternoon, about 10 to 25 and gusting to 30. So a fairly similar wind conditions today. They'll just switch out of the north by the end of the afternoon. With partly cloudy skies, a few isolated showers over there in northern and northeastern Minnesota up by the Boundary Waters and Duluth. So if you're spending a weekend up there, a few showers on Saturday. We'll stay dry in our area, though, and it's going to get chilly for your Saturday night. So I would imagine that Sunday morning, Sunday early afternoon is going to be good veggie picking conditions after we drop down to a low in the upper 40s for your Saturday night. So get out there and do a little picking Sunday morning. The afternoon's looking beautiful, though. Light north winds, 5 to 10, mainly sunny, highs in the low to mid 70s. So yeah, it's like an ideal day for me. And we'll drop back down to the upper 40s and near 50 for Saturday night. And for Labor Day on Monday, we're in the upper 70s, sunny skies. And we'll see southerly winds turn about 10 to 20 miles an hour again. So all in all, Bridges, this is a nice weekend. A lot of sunshine, just breezy for the first half of the week. But other than that, just some good old temperatures about where they should be in the upper 70s. We'll have a few days in the low 80s.
Well, I would imagine many folks are headed off to enjoy a variety of things this weekend, whether it's in the garden, whether it's harvesting out in the field. Some will be at Rolock, and those look like good temperatures for Rolock. Enjoy your time out there. I believe the featured tractor manufacturer this year is John Deere, so there'll be lots of green to look at.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's this weekend?
Yep, Labor Day weekend
totally
is Rolock.
Space that the steam threshers reunion was happening already. Wow.
Yep. Western Minnesota Steam Threshers Reunion. There is lots going on. So please go check it out. I think it's something to enjoy. In fact, while I was in Iowa this week, I spoke with a young woman who's from Virginia, and her family comes over for that in Minnesota every year. They bring tractors as well.
I see. All right. We got a photo of Dean in his loud outfit today. If you didn't get a chance to see him, there's,
There you go.
There's our guy.
He wonders why we're concerned when he shows up at events.
And for those that can't see him, he's wearing some very loud highlighter pink, yellow, and blue shorts in like a swirly pattern. And then he has a blue and black Hawaiian button-up on top of that while wearing what appears to be a Santa hat.
And reindeer antlers.
Oh, does he got a smaller hat on top? Oh, he's got reindeer antlers on top of the Santa's hat. So
that's what
Dean wore today. We were doing, a crazy outfit day, and Dean might have won.
He might have just won. Also, a faithful listener just sent a message, Justin, about you're in the live stream, wondering what barbershop quartet you've joined. I guess they want to hear you sing later on.
That's a totally different hat.
A
totally different hat. Come on.
Okay. Well, there's dress up day at WDAY. Nice.
If you want to be a part of the conversation today, add into it, ask us some questions, feel free to do so. Call us on the Red Wing Shoe line. That's 701-293-9000. I'll let you know where the barn's going up later this afternoon. If you ask nicely, you can come watch. Also, emails to the program, that's weatherorag@flagfamily.com. Comment box is there available live on Facebook and YouTube Live. And you can also catch us on Acres TV. We got fun things coming up on the show today. A few of the ag topics that we're going to be running down throughout the course of this hour is going to be that state leaders win the 4-H competition, as well as a national FFA and Microsoft collaboration, and Canadian farm training ideas. So we got three fun topics we'll hit on throughout the course of the hour. We're on down another check on that forecast for those that have missed it. And we also have a guest coming on from protecttheharvest.org. Is that, that's correct, Bridget, right?
We do. We'll be joined by Dr. Mike Siemens. And again, as you said, it's protecttheharvest.org. They are an organization that is dedicated to preserving what's going on in agriculture. And I think I describe them as educating. They want to make sure that people who are not necessarily involved in ag know what goes on, because we want to protect the harvest and what we have out there every day. Maybe that includes equipment or regulations, or how we're raising our livestock. And so I'm looking forward to having Dr. Siemens explain to us much, much more about what Protect the Harvest does. But I think that many want to listen and just learn more about the organization, how they can join and how they can be a part of it. And again, as Justin said, don't be afraid to give us your questions. You can reach us on the WDAY Red Wing Shoes Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. And you can be sending us all of those email questions, weather or ag, at flyfamily.com. Thank you to Foltz Buildings. They're helping us make dreams come true, not only with our Here We Grow project, but maybe what needs to be done on your farm, lake place, or home. They'll put up the building you've always wanted. Stick with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us today. And a big thank you to Pivot Bio. They are one of our sponsors for our Here We Grow project. We're custom farming 20 acres of corn at Glendon, Minnesota. And Pivot Bio has been very helpful in making sure that our corn is coming along great. What do you think our yield might be? Well, here's your chance to take those guesses. You can reach us on our Weather and Ag in Focus Facebook page. Leave your guesses there. And you can see us at Big Iron. That'll be September 10th, 11th, and 12th out at the West Fargo Fairgrounds. You can stop by our desk when we are on air, and that'll be in the Morton Building from 1 to 2 o'clock every day. Or please go find IntelliFarms. They are helping us out by giving away a grain gauge for one of our farmer listeners. We're also giving away a rain gauge. Hey, Addison, you're on with us. So we're going to make sure that for those of you who are able to help judge or take guesses on our yield contest, there's a place to do that. And again, IntelliFarms grain gauge giveaway. You can reach us at Big Iron while you're there to make those guesses. So looking forward to having you as part of our fun in seeing what our harvest brings in. So I think we've been working out our technical difficulties to bring our guest on. That's Dr. Mike Siemens. He is with protecttheharvest.org. So I'm just going to quick ask Justin, Addison, are we good to go with our guest? You guys might know better than I right now.
No, not quite yet. We're just getting them dialed in here.
Okay, so in that case, I do have something for you, Justin, and I thought this was a fabulous idea that's been done at the North Dakota State Fair for the last few years. That is the 4-H students who are exhibiting, and they are showing in beef, dairy, dairy goats, meat goats, sheep, and swine. They get paired with someone from within the state, whether they're through legislation, NDSU, the Extension Service, and these folks go right ahead, and the kids teach the folks how to show those animals, and then they get judged in the arena just like the kids do. Some of the folks who participated, Congressman Kelly Armstrong. We also had Public Service Commissioner Sherry Hoffert, Mohammed Khan from NDSU Extension. He's one of our sugar beet specialists, as well as Assistant Director for the Ag and Natural Resources Group. Chloe Drummond, 4-H Foundation Coordinator, Senator Kristen Roars from District 27, from District 43 in Grand Forks, Jeff Barta, and the Joe and Norman Pelletier Vice President for NDSU Agriculture. That was Greg Lardy. And Greg's up and coming as a guest on our show here very soon as well. I think it's pretty cool. I think that it's fun to note that one of our guests and sometimes a fill-in host for me, Sarah Lovis, who is the State Board of Ag Research and Education chairman, she was coached by Brecca Cuss of Stutzman County, and Sarah won the Dairy Cattle Showmanship that day at the North Dakota State Fair.
Oh, cool.
Very cool.
Good for you, Sarah.
So what if we just pull you out of the crowd one day, Justin, and decide that you're going to show animals at a fair? Could you do it?
We could give it the best shot. I'd be like, all right, here's the cow. It does cow things.
We'll put a halter on for you so you don't have to worry about that.
Drools occasionally farts.
Drool is like 40 gallons of drool. Remember, we've had this discussion.
It's quite a bit.
Quite a bit of drool. Yeah.
We got our guest squared away here, Bea.
All right. Awesome. So I'd like to introduce to our audience Dr. Mike Siemens. He is with ProtectTheHarvest.org. Dr. Siemens, how are you today?
Good. Were you just talking about cow farts? Is that what I just heard in the background there when we were trying to get connected?
There was some sarcasm attached to that from my co-host.
Well, that's right. I just came out of the pasture looking at cow's cabin, so I can appreciate that very well.
All right. Tell us more. I am a bit familiar with Protect the Harvest, but many of our listeners are not. What can you share with us today?
So in a nutshell, it basically started in 2011. Our benefactor, Mr. Forrest Lucas and his wife, Charlotte, from based out of Indiana, but also has a large Simmental operation in Missouri. In 2011, activist groups are coming into the state and trying to put something on the ballot, basically coined the puppy mill bill, to basically remove the ability to have ownership of pets and sell pets, et cetera, basically a lot of what the activist groups do. And at that time, he got involved, being asked by some of the political powers in the state to get involved. He did, and got very educated about what was happening with the activist groups, particularly the Humane Society of the United States. And from that point on, basically developed what is now known as Protect the Harvest, which, again, started in 2011. And in its general concept, it's basically there to protect and defend American agriculture, American freedoms, principles, values. We look at food security and the American farmer's ability to produce food. We promote and defend property rights, basically including land, animal, water, ownership, and use. So those are the things we do. We also, you know, work in the hunter and fishing areas. And we also work with the, you know, basically the cowboy enthusiast, rodeo enthusiast, things of that nature. Basically the groups that get attacked by the activist groups. And if it's environmental, some of the things that have been going on recently with the government, you know, some of the things that, you know, basically governmental overreach. So I've been doing this since probably the mid-90s. So I've been doing this for a while. And it's probably as aggressive and active and detrimental to the livestock and grain producers that I've ever seen it since my time of working in this area.
Okay. We're going to have a lot of questions. First and foremost, as we get started.
Can you hear me okay, though? That's the main thing. Is it?
Yeah, it came across. Oh, yeah.
Yep, good. Coming okay. across. Great. So, perfect. Okay, when you're talking about the activist groups, I most recently saw a press release that talked about just an uptick in what is being done with some of these activist groups. They're publishing lists in each state of large farms and large livestock operations. Is it legal? Because I got that question from a listener one day. Can they legally do that? And how can someone protect themselves from that?
So these lists, I will say yes, it is legal because I have not seen any legal challenges to come back against it. And the reason I say that is most of these operations have to document their operations with either farm premises IDs and things of that nature, which is a whole nother can of worms we can get into, especially on the beef side, because a lot of the beef guys do not like doing premise IDs and things of that nature, which is based around animal disease, things of that nature. And I just, before we jumped on here, I just saw another issue with HPAI out in California. You may have even reported on that. So it's just, there's a lot of issues that the government's trying to push with premise ID in case we have a big outbreak beyond HPAI, foot and mouth, things like that. And that's where that comes from. So I know the general producer doesn't like that, but that is a public recorded information, Freedom of Information Act. So they can get that. And it's no different than doxing. Is it great? No, but it does tell where the producers are. It tells their size to some extent, not get down to the total numbers, but it does tell their size. And that's been going on. That's not new. This has been going on. Oh, at least a decade, probably. I'm trying to remember when I first saw that come out. And I'm trying to remember where actually I was at, at that time, probably with Cargill, but it's probably at least 10 years old that that's been happening. So, again, not ideal, but it is something that we're dealing with, that they do promote that. And given the activist groups and some of the extremists that are on the activist groups, they, you know, use that information to their advantage, to however they see can best fit their agenda, which is basically a vegan agenda. I know that was a lot.
Okay.
That was a lot in that little
That's okay.
There.
That's okay. That was a good lot in a little statement, because I'm already making some notes of things that I think we should talk about. But it is the bottom of our hour. It's 1:29. We're going to come back. So if you can hold with us for just a little while here, we've got a much longer segment. I want to talk about things like safety for the farms when these folks try to get after the animals or anything that's going on out there, what farmers can do to protect themselves, and how you can be supported as well by those of us who are in the farm community as well as consumers. So hold on. We will be right back with Dr.
Absolutely,
Mike Siemens.
Bridget.
He is with ProtectTheHarvest.org, and we're excited to talk to you today. So be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us, and especially because we have a guest today who is Dr. Mike Siemens with ProtectTheHarvest.org. We hear about animal agriculture activists and just agricultural activists in general. And so, Dr. Siemens, we have a lot of questions for you. One of them is, I'm pretty sure there is a higher probability that an activist is going to go after an animal production facility versus a crop facility. Would you say that's true, or do you see things happening in both realms?
No, so right now I think it's at least the activist groups that I've dealt with over the last 25 years have been, I would say, 95%, 100% animal focused, being in research laboratories or on farm, dairies. Pork has been kind of the, you know, probably the more prominent areas that they've been focusing on because of housing issues, things like that, gestation crates and things of that nature. And but I would say probably 7 or 8 years ago when I was at the Global Leaf of Cargill Animal Welfare, we had one of our large feedlots that we still owned at the time out in Leote, Kansas, that had these suspicious drones flying over the feedlot. Well, lo and behold, it was an activist group out there trying to get video of things that did not exist, but try to fit their narrative of what they were trying to do. So I think you'll see with the technology enhancing in terms of smaller video cameras, in terms of drone use technology, that you will see dairy operations, pork operations to a lesser extent because they're more confined, beef feedlot operations, things of that nature being targeted at a great level, even when you get to the livestock auction markets. We've seen a lot of videos coming out of there because that's where cull animals go, and cull animals are more compromised because that's the reason they're being culled. If they were totally productive, they probably would not be culled at the time. So there are certain areas where the activists are very smart. They're very knowledgeable in terms of what goes on in our industry. And if we just do our job the way we're supposed to, make timely culling decisions and do the right thing on farm, then what the activists do will be a non-issue. It's just when sometimes when things go wrong, we don't make good decisions, we kind of get exposed. And every once in a while, an activist group will get that video, and that will just very much damage our industry and from our reputation and our, you know, what we do from an animal welfare standpoint. So we've been fighting these issues for a long time. A lot of these issues are staged and, you know, promoted from that standpoint, but we just got to do the right things. The commodity groups, National Cattlemen's, National Pork Board, National Chicken Council, NTF, National Turkey Federation, all have guidelines in place that if are followed, you know, relatively, you know, firmly and done correctly, there would be no undercover videos. So it's those kind of things that give our industry a black eye. But again, it's up to us to make sure we're doing the right things so we don't give them the opportunities to get those videos.
In addition to looking and trying to obtain a forced video or whatnot, is there anything else that these activists are doing when they attack a farm?
You know, so ever since COVID, and this goes across basically almost every industry, trying to find employees to do the job. I just took my truck down to get repaired this morning, trying to find the employees down there to actually do the work on the truck. You know, trying to find employees to work on a farm, trying to find employees to work on a factory, trying to find employees to do just general, you know, work that was done very relevant, you know, very, very relevant prior to COVID. But COVID, for some reason, has changed the mentality of the work ethic in our country, that everybody I've talked to finds it very difficult to find employees to do a job, especially if it has some manual labor associated with it, in a proper, in a, you know, really a good way. So when I talk to the farmers who are larger in size, trying to find employees to do those jobs, they've got to be very diligent and do a very good job in terms of screening those employees coming in, because obviously that's how the activists get into a lot of these operations, is by employment. And they are very patient, they are very calculated, and they will do what needs to be done to get employed. And if the employer doesn't do a good job vetting them and following them, then some of these things may happen. So there, it gets to be very complicated, but in today's world, the activist groups are very smart. They play chess sometimes, and we're playing checkers. And also, we're getting things that we get involved with from a regulatory standpoint from the government, EPA, water rights, things of that nature, eminent domain, you know, pulling people's property rights out to put in windmills or putting basically pipelines and things of that nature. So there's all kinds of things going on right now where the American farmer, rancher is up against a lot of issues that they weren't necessarily up against probably 10, 15 years ago. Much more stringent now, and there's a lot of things they need help with, and that's what we're trying to help them do.
I'm not sure that totally answered your question. I think it might have. Mm-hmm. So as you're looking at some of these things, Mike, one of the questions I would have is, half of our audience is consumers who live in the metropolitan, more metropolitan area anyway, if you mm-hmm. want to call it that, in this region. And they're simply curious, so what happens when an activist comes on the farm? Are they just spray painting graffiti on buildings? Are they releasing animals? And what's the detriment to the animals in those situations?
So I'll do a two-prong answer to that, because one of them goes back to an issue that's going on at Denver right now. It's on the ballot, and it's going to be voted on here in November. That's a slaughterhouse ban in Denver, and we'll talk about that here in a second. Most of the time, again, when I was with Cargill's, if anybody understands Cargill, it's a vast, it's the largest privately owned company, family-owned company in the world. We are based globally, and we've had, you know, basically facilities and farms across the country and across globally. So when we hire employees, they will get in there and do their job, but they will try to either propagate an issue or document an issue. And if they're documenting an issue, shame on us. We didn't do our job. We're not doing performing the way we do. We're not performing against the standards we're holding our employees to. That's an issue that is one that's not very common, but sometimes it happens. But more so, they try to stage situations that look bad on video, grab that video. Sometimes it takes them months to do it, which tells you right off the bat that it's not a problem, that they try to stage and have that video available. And if you're seeing something that goes on that takes 6 months to accumulate, then you know there's probably not a huge issue there. But again, if it takes 6 months to accumulate, then why didn't they bring that issue to the management when it first was seen? There's a lot of complexities with that. So that's basically, they're trying to get video to help with their propagation of their agenda, trying to help with their fundraising, which is a big part of these issues. I mean, videos that they put out there in the press and the public are basically a fundraising tool. And that's how they, you know, basically work. And their funding is drastically more than what the activists or our advocates are on the ag side. There's about five or six organizations on the ag side that do what we do. We basically do it in a different format, but we do similar things. The budgets on the activist groups are much larger, probably 50 to 60 times more their budget than what our budget is. So they are extremely well funded. So that's what happens. They try to get an undercover video. Beyond that, it's not spraying the graffiti. It's not any of that kind of stuff. It's trying to get that video that they can use for a fundraising effort. The thing that's going on in Denver is it's called the Denver Slaughterhouse Ban. There's an operation out of Denver right off the National Western Stockyards called Superior Farms. It's the largest lamb harvesting, slaughter, whatever your words prefer to be, in the country. And they produce a lot of lamb, you know, basically ship it all over the country. And there's a lot of ethnic groups that, and you know, enjoy lamb as part of their diet. It's one of the best run operations I've ever seen. I've been there a couple times. It's employee owned. It's well run. They just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, because the demographics in Denver have changed. If anybody follows any kind of news cycle, we'll see that Denver has changed in terms of their demographics. And the activist groups came in there thinking they had a sympathetic ear to be able to implement a Denver slaughterhouse ban, basically removing Superior Farms from Denver, removing the largest lamb slaughter in the country, with the hopes of expanding that into Colorado, where you have two of the largest beef slaughter operations in the country, Fort Morgan and Greeley, Colorado, JBS and the Cargill facility. And that's what the ultimate goal is, to try to make that impact. So it's basically winning certain things, showing a precedent, and expanding that precedent to incorporate bigger, but what they see is bigger fish. So there's a lot of complexity in this. The strategy makes perfect sense. If I'm on their side, it makes perfect sense. But I think hopefully the public will see what's going on. Superior Farms has been there since the 60s. So it's a well-established, basically business in that community that's had zero problems in the past. So there's a lot of things but again, the agendas are driven. It's a vegan agenda. It's very simple. They do not want to have animals consumed on your plate, and they do not want to have animals owned by a person. So it's just, it's a very simple thing, but it's very detrimental to our way of life, to America's way of life, to people who want to have a free choice in terms of what they're consuming on their plate. And it's just something we try to promote and protect, which hence the name of our organization.
Well, I appreciate all that background on what's been going on in Denver, because just in reading the articles, you don't hear all of the history that this has been a plant that has been in that area since the 60s, and the city has essentially grown around it. So it becomes a bit of a push-pull, who was here first, et cetera. And
exactly.
I think also it's important for folks to realize that this doesn't just happen in the U.S. It is a worldwide agenda to try to change the way people eat. And you're just happen to be one of the largest proponents of protecting our rights here in the U.S., if that would be a fair statement.
Oh, without a doubt. If you want to see what the future looks like, look to the U.K., EU, however you want to tie them together. If you want to see what the future looks like, look over there, because basically what happens over there will funnel over here. It used to take about 10 years to cross the pond to get over to the States. Now it's probably a little, with social media and things of that nature, it's a little bit quicker. But if you also watch what's happened in some of the regions over there, the farmers are having a huge pushback and actually making some inroads, pushing back in some of their efforts to put more emphasis on farming, put more emphasis on animal raising and things of that nature. Because in the simplest terms, you control the food, you control the population. That's not my coin phrase. I'm not sure what general said that in the past, but it may have been Patton. I'm not sure who. But if you control the food, you control the people. And they see that happening over there. They become very reliant on imports coming in that do not meet their standards because their standards are so high. So if you get a hungry population and they have trouble putting food on the table and feeding their children and their family, you will get a rebellion. And I've had the pleasure and privilege of traveling this entire world. And we are very fortunate here being where we are in the States, because we are an affluent society. We have the ability to worry about how animals are raised. When I travel to some parts of the country, their only ability is willing about putting food on the table. The ability how the animals are raised is so far down the line because they're trying to feed their families that it's not even a concept for them. So it's just, we are an affluent country here, and we should be raising the animals well. That's what I've basically devoted my life to. Again, since I was raising cattle as a toddler on my farm in Indiana. So there's things that we need to do, and we make sure we do them right. But we also need to make sure we put food on the table, wholesome, basically good, safe food. It's affordable. We're dealing with that now with inflation. So, those are some of the issues that people are dealing with right now. So it's not as drastic as what we've seen in other parts of the world, but it's now starting to hit the people in the pocketbook, and they've been that way for a few years now. And hopefully it makes them understand that let the farmers do what they do best, put together a wholesome, safe food, affordable supply for them, and hold them accountable, make them do what they're supposed to do, but let them do their job. And that's what we try to convey out there, to make sure when you talk about your audience being maybe more of an urban side, at least on half of it, they need to do their homework. They need to do the research. Let's not take little snippets and, clickbait out there to say this is what's true. Do some work, do some homework, find out the truth, and go out and ask experts. You know, university extension, there's good, solid, independent information out there that they can, you know, find that gives them a good, solid answer versus going to activist groups for their information and things of that nature. That's what we base our information on, scientific information. We work with universities, and that's how we try to make our recommendations and support who we support and basically push our agenda forward to make sure it's done in the correct way, but done in a way that supports our farmers and ranchers, wildlife enthusiasts, hunters, fishermen, things of that nature.
So, Mike, as folks have been listening today, and maybe they're curious about the organization, protecttheharvest.org, first, well, I have two things. One is,
Bridget,
I had a listener say, yes. Yep.
Protecttheharvest.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's .com. No, you're fine, because you're timely on that, because about 6 months ago, we were trying to change it to .org and found the logistics were just, if anybody's involved in the tech side, trying to change everything from .com to .org was just such a enormous hassle. It is .com. So it's protecttheharvest.com, not .org.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that correction. So if there's two things. One, I have a listener in Nebraska who said, I see a Protect the Harvest pickup. And is that like a field rep or someone who would work for them? And then additionally, where can people go to find out more information from you so that they can make sure to support you and read your efforts?
So very good. So shout out to Betty Doak, who is now out in Indianapolis right now at the basically covering a couple, three areas out there in Indy. So she has the pickup. She travels all over the country. Bless her heart. She is the hardest working soldier that we have in this organization because she is everywhere. So that, you know, shout out to her. So that is very cool. And she's a great resource for us. Protecttheharvest.com is the website. Then go there and get all the information we just talked about here over the last few minutes. And it's a great, we just redid that website. You're pulling it up there. So it's, that's brand new within about 6 months because we rebranded the Free and Fed America as our tagline now. We changed that about 4 months ago. So we have basically updated the entire website, and we think it's a pretty cool website, very user-friendly now. The previous one was not as user-friendly. So basically anything they want to find out and reach out to us, you know, if they have the contact, they want to get a hold of me, I think you can forward that on to them if they prefer that, or just get a hold of protecttheharvest.com, and we will answer and support anything they need going forward.
It was so much appreciated for the time today to help us talk through this. And I have a feeling we'll have more questions down the road. And now I have an expert in my Rolodex so I can reach out when I need to. So thank you for that, Mike.
Bridget, anytime. Happy to do so.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We need to look at that weather as we go into a long Labor Day weekend. And we've got a few more ag headlines to cover. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us, 154. I got a few lines open if you want to sneak into the program quick. Cue us up some questions or comments. 701-293-9000 is the studio number. Bridget, what do you got going on this weekend? We got a long weekend. Anything fun, or are you just going to spend a long weekend at home relaxing and just trying to catch up with life?
Wedding tomorrow, tomatoes to can. There's really not a lot of slowdown and things to get done, right?
Sure don't sound like it if you got all that going on. And, you know, I'm in the same boat and I'm not in the same boat. I don't have a wedding, but I have like little tasks that need to get done. Like I need to go fix some things out in my garden where I got to string up some of the tomatoes that are at 7 feet tall and they're about two and a half or 3 feet past their cages. So I'm not even sure how they're still standing at this point. And I'm almost a salsa making time too. So.
And frankly, I think I just put out the patio furniture, but Labor Day weekend,
wait, what?
Isn't it time to start thinking about putting it back in? I mean, I really do feel like I just put the patio furniture out.
Yeah, I'm putting the patio furniture out this weekend. Lady, it's like September. Well, yeah, what's your point?
Well, no,
It got out this year, didn't it?
It did. It feels like it just went out very, very recently, and now it's going to be winter coming faster than we want it to. And I'm like, oh, man, do I have to start packing it back up again?
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. It can wait. But I'm kind of low-key excited for that first, like, 12 to 36 inches of snow to drop out of the sky in a night.
You see the look I'm giving you, right?
I see the look, and I think everyone else can hear the look. Wow. See, I'm not alone, probably. Though. I know that Addison is all on board with this Snowmageddon.
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. Like I said, Bridget, it can wait. But part of me is just like, I don't know. I just want to open the door one night and see, like, brown grass. And then the next morning, I have, like, 3 feet of snow in front of the house.
No, not quite yet. I mean, after having come back from surface of the sun, hot Iowa, I need something in between. I can't go to those extremes
quite yet.
You know what we need right now? No more rain showers. We're okay there for a bit, I think.
A bomb cyclone. What's a bomb cyclone? I don't even know what to do. If there was a snowstorm or a blizzard, I would know what to do. What do I do?
I don't know, Johnny. What
in
do you
a bomb
do?
Cyclone. Oh my God!
You get a case of beer and you sit tight. That's what I do in a bomb cyclone.
Duck and cover.
What about one of these? Maybe we'll get one of these this winter. This would
be
kind of fun.
My God. First it was polar vortex. Then it was bombogenesis. Then bomb cyclone. Now the new one is thunder snow. What the hell is thunder snow?
I'll
tell you what it is.
Soon enough, we're going to wind up looking ahead to our winter weather forecast specials. We're going to be looking at hearing travel advisories and what those might look like, but we're not there yet. We got a lot of harvest to get through and we got some corn that needs more time. So let's not panic.
And we got some nice days coming up ahead. Nights are going to start getting chilly for a few nights, but overall daytime temperatures, I mean, cool in the morning and warm, borderline hot for the time of the year, I guess, coming up for the weekend into next week, at least for the next 7 days. For today, we'll top out, well, in the low 80s today with sunny skies, a little breezy out there, some gusts of 30 out of the west-northwest. For tonight, down to a low near 60, and we're in the low 80s again briefly on Saturday, falling into the 70s through the afternoon. It is windy tomorrow, but partly cloudy, and as we head into Sunday, lighter winds, still sunny with a high in the low to mid-70s and upper 70s on Monday, low 80s on Tuesday, mid-80s on Wednesday, and we'll drop back to the upper 70s for Thursday of next week. A few nights, morning temperatures, upper 40s and low 50s, so a little chilly. Everyone have a great weekend. We're maybe back on Tuesday.